The only way you're going to be able to protect your kids is to truly know them, and more than you think you do, because it's a different generation than when we grew up. The world is different.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Again, today we're in LifeWord Studios, broadcasting in over 150 languages to 123 countries with a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of the content at lifeword.org. Today, again, with me, I have John Pulley. John, it's good to have you with us. And this is, we'll just call this part two of our last podcast.
Great.
There's so much information that I believe needs to be known, especially when it comes into sex trafficking, that I think, and hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but the church sometimes just kind of pushes under the rug. Anybody who is watching local news knows that there's a very large Baptist church in Little Rock, that there was a case several years ago of sexual assault that was kind of pushed under the rug, and now it's come to light. It's caused the church to split. It's caused millions of dollars of consulting and attorney's fees, when if it would just have been made known,
right,
that all of this could be avoided. And so I think that there is a stigma, I guess, when it comes in the church and with sexual assault. But you gave a very interesting statistic the last time on our show of the statistics based upon divorce rate within the church and divorce rate outside the church. Now, tell me again what that is.
Well, that was part of my rant that came out one day at a church I was speaking at, as I was trying to think about how the church does things wrong. Like, what are they missing? Like, what's the biggest issue with the church? And I was saying that the church has an honesty problem, in that I don't think it's unfounded. I just think that it is that we feel that we can't express things that are difficult to talk about. And in general, I think in the church, at least in the United States, with the Puritan roots that we have, I just think there's a lot of issues around even the discussion of sex, anything having to do with sex or sexuality, is a challenge for the church, because of course you're trying to protect your children and make sure they learn at an age-appropriate time what they need to know. But we've also got this clash of culture right now where sexuality is taken over through pornography, through, you know, all the stories you see about human trafficking now that are now finally starting to come to the surface. So I think that what I was saying we say to the people outside the church, we want you to come be a part of us, but they look at us and go, wait a minute, isn't the divorce rate the same for you guys as it is for us out here in the world? I know a lot of people that do drugs at your church. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that you've got fewer drug users at your church than I have in my workplace. And mm-hmm. I think that that's a hard reality for people to grapple with, I think, and to kind of face to face with. And I think when you throw in the combination of our children are now being targeted, our vulnerable adults are being targeted by traffickers who take advantage of them, now you've got this clash of the sexuality that has been held down and put in this little box that we shove underneath the table so that no one looks at or talks about. We now have to talk about it. Like, the quickest thing I always say to people is, if you're having the talk with your son or your daughter about sex at age 13 and talking about pornography at age 13, you're too late.
Right. Yeah. You know? And everything is over-sexualized, from advertisements to movies to just conversation with mm-hmm. people today. Last weekend, Luke and I went to Dallas on spring break. My wife didn't get to go because it was an issue where she had to work all of a sudden. So it turned into a boys' trip, which we really enjoy. And we went to a very large water park there in the Dallas area, and I will not give the name of the water park for legal reasons.
Fair enough.
But while we were there, this group of probably 30 men came in, and these were grown men, very large men, and I just thought it was odd that these men would be coming into a water park that was, I mean, it's not primarily for children, but that's the market, you know.
Right.
And they all had on these T-shirts that said TBRU 2024. Well, it made me very curious about what that meant, especially even more when all 30 of them changed into Speedos. And I'm talking, you couldn't tell some of these guys had anything on.
Hmm.
Not to over, explain. So I went and grabbed my phone out of the locker, Googled TBRU, which is Texas Bear Roundup. So it is the homosexual men who are very large or are referred to, I guess, as bears. And they came to the water park, but they dressed that way. But that's normal to them, I guess. That's within their culture. It did not take long for security to go to them and say, hey, you need to put on something a little bit more appropriate. And their response to that was, well, there are women here that have on bikinis. And if they can wear that, we should be able to wear this, which is the whole agenda, you know, of equality and that sort of thing. Well, it all ended with about 20 police officers coming in there and removing these men from the water park. And so my son, who's 9 years old, one, asked me the question, why are all these guys in their underwear?
Right.
And then two, why are the police making them leave? You know, and so when I look at the innocence of a child, as you just said, if we're not having the talk until they're 12, 13 years old, then we've already missed it. I read a startling statistic recently, and it said that in the South, we have to assume, and with South, we're talking about, you know, the Southern dirty South of America, the Bible Belt. If a child is over the age of 6, you have to assume that they have been sexually assaulted until proven otherwise.
Wow.
Now that is something that is startling to me,
mm-hmm.
but it is that relevant. And if it's that relevant, we need to be talking about it. We need to be having that conversation. So today specifically, we're going to talk about sex trafficking, which is affecting millions of people around the world, and even so much in a way that we wouldn't normally see how it starts. So let's kind of just give an overview of what sex trafficking is to begin with.
Of course. Well, sex trafficking is, the simplified definition is where something of value is exchanged, where someone is exchanging something of value for a commercial sex act, right? Mm-hmm. There's an exchange of it could be money, but it could be services. It could be something. There's something of value exchange, but the person that are offering this are being forced to do it. They've been frauded into it, or they've been coerced into it. And so it's the use of force, fraud, or coercion where something of value is exchanged for a commercial sex act. That's the technical definition of it. And where that plays into is, I think that one of the things we're talking about, or the reason we're having some of these conversations, is because when you start talking about what that entails, I don't think people realize how deep it runs, right? Because let's say something of value is exchanged. Most of us think of money. Mm-hmm. However, what's something you value besides money?
Food.
Food.
Housing.
Right? Housing. Clothing. And if you have aged out of foster care, you're a runaway, you have nowhere to go, and you're sitting at a bus station, you don't know where you're going to eat, you don't know where you're going to sleep, and somebody shows up and goes, hey, are you new to town? I got a place. Come stay with me. I'll feed you tonight and get you taken care of. Mm-hmm. Right? Somebody's preying on a vulnerability that's there. And especially when you start talking about kids, they have a natural vulnerability because clearly their brains are not fully developed yet. So in all of this, I think that's a great place to start, is just understanding that something of value being exchanged might be, it's on the trafficking side when they start to get a victim even. They start using those sorts of things. And so in that, I think that people get, I'm trying to think of exactly how to say it on your podcast without getting too graphic. I think you have to get into some conversations of, for instance, you have children that are sexting is the big thing now, right? People, when they start to date, send naked images to each other, which, again, different world than I grew up in. Yeah. But
well, you had to take a Polaroid.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. And I didn't have one of those till recently. So in that, you know, you've got this happening, and what you have to explain to kids is you recognize that you're carrying child pornography on your phone right now, and you could be arrested for it. The kids are horrified. But you get into what happens when somebody wants to borrow somebody's cool car for the weekend, one of their buddies' cool car in high school, and they say, well, you know, honey, if you will do such and such with this guy, we'll get to use his car this weekend. Now, that's using coercion to get her to perform some sort of an act, a sex act, where something of value is exchanged. Now, there's no money exchanged, right? But there's a car or the use of it. And we go, okay, that's messed up, but they're kids. And I go, no, this is how it works. And we don't understand that. And I think that's a big issue, because when you look at the statistics, I always say this, 99% of statistics can be disproved by those statistics. But they estimate that there's roughly 40 million trafficking, human trafficking people in the world, of the majority of which is labor trafficking, which people go, oh, what's labor trafficking? Well, someone comes to our country and they've promised this job. I've got a friend that he was promised a job and brought over here, but then he and his family were instantly put in this one room where they had a couple of pillows and that's it. They were forced to work day and night, couldn't speak the language, got their passports taken. So there's all these random scenarios that encapsulates trafficking that I think it's hard sometimes for people to wrap their head around it, because it's also horrible to look at. Mm-hmm. It's just a horrible thing to pull back the cover and look at it, you know?
Right. Right. And just to specify the difference between, say, prostitution and sex trafficking is that most of the time prostitution, the person is willing to make that transaction. Most of the time, maybe. But then in trafficking, it is coerced. It is forced in some conditions. So where there's a very fine line of difference there, there is that difference of where someone is forced or coerced to do those things.
Absolutely, but I can't let it go. The majority of people in prostitution, like every survey that's ever been made, the majority of them want to get out but feel trapped in it.
Yeah.
So it's, yes, there are people out there who choose to do that to make dollars. However, people are forced to go into those industries and do it because that's the place where, even though they're advertising in the same locations and they're doing the same kinds of things, they don't get to choose that. If they don't go make X number of dollars for their pimp over the night, then they're going to get beaten. Their dog's going to get beaten. Their child's going to get beaten. Those are the things that are... So I think it's a misnomer, but you're accurate in that someone that actually chooses to do it on their own, or what some people would term a sex worker, people who choose to do it on their own, yes, that is a choice. But people who are forced into it, it's not their choice at all.
And I do know in some of the progressive states or liberal states, there is a push to make sex workers legal, which I would think, which I don't agree with that, first of all. I believe that intimacy is a gift from God, and it should only be used in that manner. But when you move outside of it being Christ-focused, that you move into a realm of opening yourself to spiritual warfare, of psychological conditions, of trauma, depression, anxiety, the whole gamut of things. And so while this progressive movement of making sex work legal, I think, and if you could speak to that, I think that just opens the door for more sex trafficking.
I would agree with you from an anecdotal perspective, just what I've seen. And my logic tells me that's what it is. So just this might be helpful for some of your listeners to understand. In the anti-human trafficking movement, for the past few years, people have been pushing and talking about something called the Nordic model. So what's always been messed up and very confusing is that we've had some level of understanding that some of these women are being forced to do it. However, the crimes, when they did police stings, most of the people being arrested were the prostitutes themselves, not the buyers. Mm. And so what happens is these women, the majority of whom, again, refuting you a bit, the majority of whom want out and don't want to be there, what you find is that they're getting arrested for the thing that they're being forced to do. They're a victim. They're not the perpetrator of a crime. So the Nordic model happened, I don't want to say Norway is where it came from, but I'm going to lie because my brain's slipping early. But there was a model where they made it illegal to solicit for sex, but not illegal to sell it. In other words, if you wanted to buy from someone, you could be arrested for asking someone, can I purchase you or can I pay for a service? However, they cannot be arrested for offering that service.
It's a little oxymoronic.
It is. And so, but they're what they're attempting to do is put the onus back on the buyers, who are the ones that are driving human trafficking. If there was no market, there would be no human trafficking. But if you put it back on them and not on the girls that are in it, then you are allegedly you're going to find that things get better. Like it's not illegal for them. The girls aren't going to jail all the time. And they have a better chance of getting out. Now with you, I agree wholeheartedly, because this is where I go. People in some of the states are wanting to legalize sex work, just period. Sex work is okay. Go do it. We're going to license it. We're going to track you. You can get health care now, all these benefits that they're trying to sell. But at the end of the day, people who are in sex work are the same people who are being pimped and trafficked every day. They just have a different thing. They just now call it sex work instead of prostitution. It's just another word for an activity that is deemed illegal in most states in the United States. And that if you do open the door to that and say sex work is okay, do you think if it's legal that every pimp trafficker in America that knows that it's now legal in this state is not going to bring his girls there, because they can't get arrested now? They can't get in trouble. So I agree with you. I don't know how it's going to be different, but understanding that there is that push for what's termed the Nordic model, that has been a big push, and people can Google the Nordic model of human trafficking, and it is a move to try to shift it away from all the consequences laying on these victims and putting it back on the buyers, who are the ones driving in the first place. So I think there are some good things to it, but I don't know that it's going to solve the problem.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, especially those in the South, which maybe I'm just more aware because that's where I live. You know, if we look at, let's say, alcoholism, they would say, well, just stop drinking. You know, or you look at drug use, well, just stop using drugs. And a majority of those people would have the same feeling about sex work. Well, just stop doing it. And they don't understand that behind the scenes, you're not able to stop.
Mm-mm.
They will kill you if you stop. And so in doing that and understanding that, how do people even get involved? What are some signs that we may see? And you know, this happens in the church. We don't want to talk about it. We try our best to make sure that it doesn't happen. But just because you do a background check doesn't mean that that person isn't involved in anything. A background check's not going to show that they're addicted to child porn,
right?
Or a background check isn't going to show that they may have been accused of something. I was interviewing somebody the other day and I said, hey, you've given me 3 references, but I need the names of 3 people that hate your guts. And he was like, well, I don't know. I said, there's people that hate your guts. And he said, well, why do you want that? And I said, because I want to know what people really think about you. What really is going on? And I said, I'll be able to tell the truth from the, you know, exaggerations. But as a police officer who did background checks, that's what we did. We wanted the name of the ex-wife. We wanted the name of the ex-girlfriend, you know, so that we could see what's going on here. And while, again, it may be inflammatory, if there's a pattern between 3 people, that's going to give you something to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that I think as a church we need to be more hypervigilant of is conducting thorough background checks. And that doesn't just mean going to the courthouse and pulling their criminal record, but that we are really searching out. But getting off that soapbox, what are some practical things that we may see in the church that could give the idea that there could be a sex trafficking issue? Now, again, you know, even when we talk about suicide and suicide prevention, we don't always assume that somebody's suicidal because they check the box.
Right.
And so I want to preface this by saying, just because somebody might check the box doesn't mean that something's going on there. but it is worth looking into. So what are some of the signs that we may see when it comes to sex trafficking?
That's a great question, because I feel that has shifted a little bit over the last 5 to 10 years in how the anti-trafficking world is looking at it. Because it used to be, for instance, the National Human Trafficking Hotline is run by a group called the Polaris Project. And it used to be you could go on their site and they had this long list of here are the things that are potential signs. Your child is having mood swings, right? They're usually a compliant child. Now they're becoming mean. They're dressing inappropriate. They are not talking to you as a parent as much. They're being private and secretive on their phone. By the way, do any of these sound like anything other than a normal teenager? Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Right, yeah. Right. And I think that the biggest shift that is being made now, and Polaris pulled down that big long list that they had, and now they talk about how people identify themselves or some of the things, like if you've got a kid that or someone in the church that you look around that doesn't have much money, you know, they don't have means, but suddenly they're carrying an expensive handbag, or suddenly they're able to have some articles of clothing that you know is a little bit outside of their range. I'm not asking you to judge people for not having means. I'm just saying be aware of what's going on. That may be an indicator that someone is buying them off, so to speak, to build that relationship in the background with them. But the attitude things, I tell fathers constantly, I've told fathers this for years, the best thing that you can do to protect your daughter from being trafficked is to let her know and understand that you love her, period, and there's nothing that she can ever do or that will ever be done to her that will make you not love her. Because the first thing that a trafficker wants to do with girls is he wants to start isolating them from the father, isolating them from the family, isolating them from the friends, because they're working over a 6 months, a year, they're working to build this psychological wall all around them so that you depend on me. I'm the one that buys you nice things. I'm the one that takes care of you. No one understands you like I do. So in this, I think that the simple answer is get to know people. That is the simple answer, because teenagers are going to have issues. They're teenagers. Whether or not this is just normal things, if you see them suddenly have an entirely new set of friends that you don't know, there's something going on that they're shifting. They feel more comfortable, these new people. Figure out what that is. Get to know them enough. Listen to them. Don't shame them for what they've done. Yeah, be a parent. You have to discipline, I understand, but there's a point to which the only way you're going to be able to protect your kids is to truly know them, and more than you think you do, because it's a different generation than when we grew up. The world is different, and I think to recognize those signs, a lot of them look like regular teenagers, but you only know it through relationship.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, for parents to look for signs, I really think parents need to educate themselves. There are, and I can give you references for the show notes, but there are a ton of organizations out there. Shared Hope International is a group that they do a conference each year. This year it'll be in Phoenix, but they do 3 days of human trafficking awareness. They're focused on the juvenile aspects of it, but they've got a ton of educational things on their website. You can sign up to be an ambassador to speak in your area and to do events to bring awareness to human trafficking. NCOSI is another name of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. They have a ton of videos. They work on the legislative and policy side to work at the higher levels, but there's tons of information out there that you can learn from them. NCMEC, I always get NCMEC wrong. It's missingkids.org is the name of their website. But that's where you report missing children. They've also got a ton of information that, while it doesn't necessarily, it's not directly sex trafficking information, what it is it's another ability that you can start to understand, because parents this age, and I'll say in the South, God bless us, we're a little bit behind sometimes, but we've got to get more educated, and we're going to have to start having some uncomfortable conversations with our kids that our parents would have never had with us. That's the hardest part, is at 11, which is roughly the average age that boys are introduced to pornography, at 11, to have a conversation with your child. If you start talking to them about sex at 13, they've seen it on their phones, I assure you. And that's where I say, as parents, the best thing you can do is take enough interest in your child that you will build that relationship in every way that you can. That way you know if they're getting off and not talking to any of their friends or if they're just being a teenager and being a little crazy. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think we could say any type of issue can be noticed by relationship, you know, whether it's a mental health issue or whether it's sex trafficking or mm-hmm. or whether, you know, it's your GPA is dropping, you know, that relationship is what builds. And, you know, there was this huge push several years ago that and probably is even more relevant today of gentle parenting. Of you're to be your child's friend, you're to, you know, you're to love them and encourage them. And while you should be friendly to them, and while you should be loving to them, this is very serious stuff that has lifelong psychological effects. Whether they were trafficked for a month, or for weeks, or for years. There is permanent psychological effects. Mm-hmm. I can tell you to this day, I remember the first time that I ever saw anything pornographic.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember exactly what I saw,
mm-hmm.
where I was at, and what it was. It made a permanent imprint in my mind, which we know when anything like that happens, it is a core memory that is forever stored.
Right.
And, you know... As a caution to young men, those aren't things you're ever going to forget. Those aren't things you're ever going to get out of your mind. And porn and all of that will affect your intimacy with your spouse. It will affect the way that you talk to other people and treat other people. And so when we see these psychological effects, what are in your work and in your experience, what is the most common long-term psychological effect?
On the victims? Mm-hmm. I think that there is, again, I've worked more with buyers on this than with survivors, of course. But in that, gosh, I don't know. It's different for everybody, but the core of it is you're still always hitting at your self-esteem. And you don't believe that you're worth more than your body. Mm-hmm. And I think that is damaging enough for any, I mean, think of the, you know, body issues that most of us have anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Let alone being a teenager, not being able to handle it. I think that there is, it's the deep psychological control. And for some people, they controlled it by threatening, I'll bring your sister into this if you don't do what I say. Others, they said, I'll kill your pet. Others, I know where your parents live. So there's a manipulation, but underneath all the manipulation, and there are, I mean, lest you think that pimps are these guys with weird hats and canes that look ridiculous, there are entire books written. Here is how to psychologically train a woman to be that. There are entire books written. And in that psychological stuff, I think that at the end of it, I say this all the time. There are four core beliefs of an addict, according to Patrick Carnes, in Out of the Shadows for Sex Addiction. He said, number one, as I'm a bad, unworthy person. That's what they believe. I'm just bad. You're broken. You're not broken. You can fix things, but I'm broken completely. Number two is you wouldn't love me if you really knew, so I can't tell you. Right. Number three is I'm the only one that can meet my needs because I can't tell you because you wouldn't love me anymore, so I'm the only one. Mm-hmm. And number four is sex. Food, you know, housing, church leadership is my greatest need, right? Mm-hmm. That's encapsulated in all addictions. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you are, in all addictions. Yeah. And so you're dealing with that psychology of I'm broken, no one will love me, and I have to take care of myself because nobody else will because I'm broken. Mm-hmm. And I think you've got that core, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, you know, or the type of abuse that's done. I think you've got those same things that are the hardest things to overcome.
Yeah. You know, recently, just a few days ago, in one of the Facebook groups that I'm in, you know, they can do anonymous posts now. And this lady said, hey, I've dealt with depression for years. I have an appointment with a physician in a month and with a therapist in 2 months. But I need something right now. Are there any resources? And out of maybe the 25 comments that was given there, 9 of them were, you just need to trust Jesus, or you just need to come to church. You need to find Jesus. Now, of those 4 things that you just mentioned, if we understand who we are to the Father, those things can be alleviated. But very rarely is it the relationship that we have with the Father immediately wipe those things out, because the enemy is still there telling us that this isn't true. You know, this isn't right. This isn't, and the enemy is really good at his job.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep us entrapped in these things. And so, you know, I'm not really big on noethetic counseling or Christian counseling, because it is guilt and shame is the basis of a lot of things. And there, if we are surrounded by guilt and shame, then all 4 of those instances are reaffirmed in guilt and shame. And so as we look at it, yes, you need Jesus. Yes, you right? need a relationship with the Father.
Right.
But as my friend Ben Bennett has a shirt and he wears all the time, it says, it's okay to have Jesus and a therapist.
Right.
You know, that we need people that can help us along in this journey.
Yes.
Now, one thing, and this is backing up a little bit, but we kind of focused on fathers, how to protect our daughters.
Mm-hmm.
But females are not exclusive right. to sex trafficking.
Right.
While it may be less common for boys, it is still there.
Absolutely.
And so are the in your line of work, and I'm asking this because I don't know,
mm-hmm.
Are the warning signs the same for boys as they are for girls?
I have to say, on the surface, yes. I mean, because you're dealing with self-esteem, you're dealing with psychological manipulation, there's a playbook for that. So on the surface, yes. I think underneath it, it's the same way when you counsel someone for alcoholism. If you counsel a woman for alcoholism, you're going to think about things different in general terms, mm-hmm. right, than you are when you're counseling a man, because a man approaches things differently than a woman. I think with men and boys that are involved in trafficking or that have gotten into that, a lot of that you see are runaways, people that come out of the foster care system, that they're making money because it's the only way they know to do to protect themselves to survive. And there's 1,000 other reasons. You can't just boil it down to one. But I would say that, yes, the core of what they're going after is absolutely the same. It's just that especially for, sounds like a dumb thing to say. I say, especially for men, there is a shame around being used.
Mm.
And that sounds stupid, because there's a shame around being used for women too. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's been a lot of stuff in culture that has allowed, especially recently, last 10 years, 20 years, allowed women to start to be able to say things out loud that they mm-hmm. never could say before, that I don't know if men have found the same kind of resources or gotten recognized as much, mm-hmm. because men and women do tend to have different standards put out by our society on how we approach sexuality and those sorts of things. So yeah, I hope that answers your question. Yeah. It's the same core yeah. that they're going after.
So what do we do?
Oh, your listeners probably aren't going to like this, but I'm going to say this first and foremost to men and women listening to this podcast, which apparently has 2 billion people. Does that not make everyone nervous when you say that every time you say it?
I hope so.
Like,
yeah.
2 billion people.
And the thought, just to add in, is that this podcast, and I know like some of my TikToks, go to countries that this is their culture,
mm-hmm.
that the men give their daughters away, or that, you know, prearranged marriages and
right.
and things like that. So going out into the world, yes, it is crazy.
Yeah, and I think, how do we deal with it? First of all, I'm going to say this. I've made this statement every time I've been on a podcast or spoken recently. because of the prevalence of pornography in our society and on our phones, we have seen the very tip of the iceberg of what is coming, of how much this is going to impact relationships, intimacy, and how many sexual crimes we're going to see over the next 10 to 20 years. We're at the tip of the iceberg. Everybody goes, oh, my gosh, it's so bad. No, we're at the tip of the iceberg because we're hiding it. Like the church shoves things under the rug, everybody shoves porn under the rug. Oh, well, everybody looks at it. Everybody knows it's out there. We all see it. I've seen it since I was 11, blah, 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 blah. It's the tip of the iceberg. Why? Because what it is doing is I again, as a porn addict, former porn addict, I look at things and I go, I've seen a lot of porn. And you don't see pornography that is a couple that's been together for 30 years, that's been through life and death and raised children together, and now they're coming together. Porn is all about the physical side of things, and it trains our brains to objectify bodies as tools to be used for our sexual gratification. On the surface, we go, yeah, that's natural. It's in me. But on the deeper level, it's changing. I mean, you can't change how you do it. You can't fix that you do it, because if you objectify for hours a week looking at pornography, you can't not objectify at church. Guess who sees that? Your children and every other child. So I'm going to start with, let's start with you. Make sure that you're dealing with and finding someone to talk with about your addiction to porn if you have it. Because Barna's statistics said 69% of men had looked at porn in the last, you know, I forget what it was, 30 days. When my corollary statistic is 29% of men lied. But in all of that, we've got to deal with that issue. Secondarily, get involved with somebody in your local. There are local organizations. There are a ton of organizations you can find. Just Google anti-human trafficking work in your area. You'll find someone locally. Go see if you can volunteer there. Go see what you can do to help. Now, when you show up there, don't go, well, I want to work with victims. Never mind that you're not trauma-informed. You've never worked with a victim in your life, and you have no idea what you're asking for. Go in there and serve and learn. Serve and learn. That's what you need to do. I mentioned Shared Hope International. I've mentioned Polaris Project. I've mentioned NCOSI. All of those are tools that will have information out there that you can find that will be fairly reliable in the world of QAnon and conspiracy theories, which I noticed we did not bring up because I would go off for an hour on that.
Well, I did want to just take a couple of minutes because you could go on hours about this. Is that one of the most recent pushes to make people aware of sex trafficking came in the form of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
While that movie was great, and the concept and the idea of how it happened was wonderful, but there's another side of the story that was not told. While it was in some media news outlets, it wasn't in any of the major network outlets. So let's spend maybe 5 minutes and just talk about that. And so the warning sign of when even people who are working in anti-trafficking could actually be trafficking.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I would say that. I think that part of the challenge, and this is what I will say, for those of you who have friends that have actually done work in anti-trafficking, I would say this, listen to what they're telling you. Mm-hmm. Because when Sound of Freedom came out, I cannot tell you how much mine and Amanda's phone rang. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? I refused to go see the movie because I knew the organization it was about, and I knew the rumors that had swirled about Tim Ballard for years. Mm-hmm. And there's financial questions about how finances were handled. There's questions about what was going on in some of their ops and the things that they did. But what's now come out, which is very interesting, is that what's come out is that Tim Ballard himself, who the movie is about, and it's supposed to be a microcosm or it's a conglomeration of a bunch of his different ops. Nobody goes into the jungle by themselves to rescue people. That's not how that works. But in that, we kept saying, you find people locally. Find your local people who are doing work, because what happens is Tim Ballard and Our Underground Railroad did a great job of selling marketing videos of them going in and rescuing victims. Kudos to them for finding victims. I'm not saying that was bad. This is where it gets tricky. However, when it comes out that one of your producers on an op literally touched a 16-year-old girl and then said, oh, I hope the Mexican police didn't see that. And then when it came out, after Sound of Freedom came out last year, when that came out, that accusation, the producer said, oh, well, I've got an affidavit from the Mexican police saying that she was 18. Your response to working for an anti-trafficking org where you touched somebody that is a victim you just saved, your response was, I've got an affidavit that says she's 18? Mm-hmm. Who thinks that's a response besides something that's going to bring up anger? But there's big question marks around the marketing machine that it became. And now it's turned out that in some of these ops that they did where they were training to go into an area, I mean, it's come out, the accusation at least is that you were required to sleep in the same bed with Tim Ballard, take showers with Tim Ballard. I mean, you can go through the list of things that was required in their training to appear real that just pushed the envelope that the majority of people in anti-trafficking knew about, that we kept going, y'all just calm down, find people locally, find people locally. And that's what I've been saying about all of that, because when you want the rescues, or when you want to be the movie Taken with Liam Neeson, every dad wants to be that guy. But these things, when we focus on those, or I go into QAnon for, you know, a couple years back, QAnon was a big thing. It still is, I know. But, you know, Hillary Clinton selling pizzas with John Podesta and children at the same time at a pizza parlor, I'm going, what is wrong with you people? Wayfair is selling children in cabinets. All you're doing when you give in to these conspiracy theories, which, by the way, usually only hits one side of the aisle, and this is not a political issue, it's a human rights issue, make no bones about it ever. But in that, you've got a whole slew of things that we've got to meander through to get to, that the more energy and effort that you put into focusing on Wayfair and whether or not Tom Hanks has some house with special paint on it that avoids the laser beams of the government. But when you focus on that stuff, you know what you're not focusing on? The local truck stop where somebody's working in the parking lot who might be forced, fraud, and coerced into it. Mm-hmm. You're not paying attention to what's going on with your own children. You're getting all riled up about some political action that you think is going to stand against the evil, instead of looking locally and going, how can I protect my schools? How can I protect my families and my church? And I think that's where the danger of sensationalizing human trafficking gets, is that, yes, in Hollywood, there are probably people tied up behind bars and chained. In the majority of America, that is not how it looks. It looks very different. Kids are going to school, and you had no idea they're being trafficked. You know, I think those are the pieces of when you get into the sensational as opposed to bringing awareness, you get your focus off, and all you're doing is helping traffickers if you go down that road. Get involved with people locally. Find organizations locally and help.
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up in the little town of Magazine, Arkansas. There were 799. At least that's what the population was when I lived there. I think it's over 1,000 now. But statistically, there is somebody in that community being trafficked.
Mm-hmm.
And as a small community, you know, that is such a stigma that, hey, we don't want to bring that up. And statistically in Conway here, there are people being trafficked, that look like normal everyday people, but they're stuck. They're afraid, and they may still be living at home with their parents. There are children being groomed right now. Not just by some guy off the street, but by school teachers or, people in the ministry, or somebody in jiu-jitsu, or somebody wherever.
On their video game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've had to be very careful with Luke. He loves to play Roblox, and, you know, there's live chat. I saw this the other day. I don't remember where. It was some anti-trafficking thing somewhere, and this guy said, I want to show you how fast it takes. And so he logs into just a general chat room, and he says, 14-year-old female in whatever state he was in. And within seconds, somebody texts back or messaged back and said, so you're 14 years old? I'm 50 years old. Do you have a problem with an older man? Now, if we are teaching our children right, we'd say, no, I'm not talking to you, you know.
Right.
But there is this idea that we should be open to talk to anybody about anything. But that's how quick it happens just on the onset. So hopefully this episode today, while it could be much, it could be explained much more graphically. I don't want this episode for our listeners to seem like, yeah, there's sex trafficking, but it's not really that bad. We didn't even scratch the surface of how bad it actually is. But I would encourage our listeners to get with organizations, to learn, to educate yourself, to see the warning signs in your children, but to develop a relationship, not just with your children, but your children's friends.
Yes.
And the youth in your church. But even more so, again, it's not limited to gender or to age. Mm. So it's the relationships that show us that something's wrong, that something's off. So any last words for the pod?
For those of you in the United States, if you go to Shared Hope International, it's sharedhope.org, they went through all states in America, and they gave them a report card on how well they're doing at fighting trafficking. What they did is they looked at a variety of different things, you know, how much education is done on this, what kind of arrests are there, can victims get restitution? There's all these different policies and things. You can look at your state and see how you've done, and they also have links there to contact your local representatives, your congressional representatives, your governor. There will be links inside of there. So that's another thing that you can get into, is to find out, how is my state doing, and what are we doing here, and how can we put our efforts into getting better as a state? That might be helpful for those in the U.S.
Great. Well, John, it's good to have you with us again here today. Of course, I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at thedocbrian.com. You can find all kinds of different media content at lifeword.org. So we'd invite you to come take a look at all of the Christian content there. John, I know this is not an easy topic to talk about, and you're very close to this topic, and which makes you even more passionate about it. But thank you for being willing to come and talk about this today.
It's an honor, and yes, my wife is a survivor of human trafficking, but she also has spent the last 9 years working and advocating in the same thing. So we've been in this fight together for several years now, and thank you. It's an honor and a privilege for us to get to share stories, because we believe that the person that's listening right now to my voice has a choice, and they can learn, they can do something inside of their churches and their communities or not. But the more we can tell people, and the more awareness we get, the better chance we have of men and women stepping up in communities and saying, this isn't going to happen here, and we're going to figure out how to.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening today. We'll see you soon.